And who cares if it doesn't work, because nothing else works. And if nothing works, then the end is nigh, and everybody's problems will look different when the red sun rises. Right? Isn't that right? They dress it up. They call it a wager or gamble, but it's really just sleight of hand for the purpose of distracting the rubes. Interesting analysis, I said. But would I be here talking to you if I thought this was an interesting analysis? Ask the appropriate questions if you want to argue with me. Such as? Such as, who exactly is Wan Ngo Wen? Who does he represent, and what does he really want? Because despite what they say on television, he's not Mahatma Gandhi in a munchkin package. He's here because he wants something from us. He's wanted it from day one. The replicator launch. Obviously. Is that a crime? A better question would be, why don't the Martians do this launch themselves? Because they can't presume to speak on behalf of the entire solar system. Because a work like this can't be undertaken unilaterally. He rolled his eyes. Those are things people say, Tyler. Talking about multilateralism and diplomacy is like saying I love you. It serves to facilitate the fucking. Unless, of course, the Martians really are angelic spirits descended from heaven to deliver us from evil. Which I presume you don't believe. One had denied it so often that I could hardly object. I mean, look at their technology. These guys have been doing high-end biotech for something like 1,000 years. If they wanted to populate the galaxy with nanobots, they could have done it a long time ago. So why didn't they? Ruling out explanations that depend on their better nature, why? Obviously because they're afraid of a reprisal. Reprisal from the hypotheticals? They don't know anything about the hypotheticals we don't know. So they claim. Doesn't mean they're not afraid of them. As for us, we're the assholes who launched a nuclear strike on the polar artifacts not that long ago. Yeah, we'll take the responsibility, why not? Jesus, look at it, Tyler. It's a classic setup. It could hardly be more slick. Or maybe you're paranoid. Am I? Who defines paranoia this far into the spin? We're all paranoid. We all know there are malevolent, powerful forces controlling our lives, which is pretty much the definition of paranoia. I'm just a GP, I said. But intelligent people tell me. You're talking about Jason, of course. Jason tells you it'll all be okay. Not just Jason. The whole Lomax administration, most of Congress. But they depend on the wonks for advice. And the wonks are as hypnotized by all this as Jason is. You want to know what motivates your friend Jason? Fear. He's afraid of dying ignorant. The situation we're in, if he dies ignorant, it means the human race dies ignorant. And that scares the living shit out of him. The idea that a whole arguably intelligent species can be erased from the universe without ever understanding why or what for. Maybe instead of diagnosing my paranoia, you ought to think about Jason's delusions of grandeur. He's made it his mission to figure out the spin before he dies. One shows up and hands him a tool he can use to that end, and of course he buys it. It's like handing a matchbook to a pyromaniac. Do you really want me to tell him this? I don't. E.D. looked suddenly morose, or maybe it was just his blood alcohol peaking. I thought, because he listens to you. You know better than that. He closed his eyes. Maybe I do. I don't know. But I have to try. Do you see that? For the sake of my conscience. I was startled that he had confessed to having one. Let me be frank with you. I feel like I'm watching a train wreck in slow motion. The wheels are off the track and the driver hasn't noticed. So what do I do? Is it too late to pull the alarm? Too late to yell duck? Probably so. But he's my son, Tyler. The man driving the train is my son. He's in no more danger than the rest of us. I think that's wrong. Even if this thing succeeds, all we stand to get out of it is abstract information. That's good enough for Jason. But it's not good enough for the rest of the world. You don't know Preston Lomax. I do. Lomax would be more than happy to tag Jason with a failure and hang him for it. A lot of people in his administration want perihelion closed down or turned over to the military. And those are best-case outcomes. Worst case, the hypotheticals get annoyed and turn off the spin. You're worried Lomax will shut down perihelion? I built perihelion. Yes, I care about it. But that's not why I'm here. I can tell Jason what you said. But you think he'll change his mind? Now E.D. inspected the tabletop. His eyes went a little vague and watery. No. Obviously not. But if he wants to talk, I want him to know he can reach me. If he wants to talk. I wouldn't make it an ordeal for him. Honestly. I mean, if he wants that. It was as if he had opened a door and his essential loneliness had come spilling out. Jason assumed E.D. had come to Florida as part of some Machiavellian plan. The old E.D. might have, but the new E.D. struck me as an aging, remorseful, newly powerless man who found his strategies at the bottom of a glass and who had drifted into town on a guilty whim. I said, more gently, "Have you tried talking to Diane?" "Diane?" He waved his hand dismissively. "Diane changed her number. I can't get through to her. Anyway, she's involved with that fucking end-of-the-world cult." "It's not a cult, E.D. Just a little church with some odd ideas. Simon's more involved with it than she is. She's spin paralyzed. Just like the rest of your fucking generation. She took a nosedive into this religious bullshit when she was barely out of puberty. I remember that. She was so depressed by the spin. Then suddenly she was quoting Thomas Aquinas at the dinner table. I wanted Carol to speak to her about it. But Carol was useless, typically. So you know what I did? I organized a debate. Her and Jason. For 6 months they'd been arguing about God. So I made it formal, like, you know, a college debate. And the trick was, they each had to take the side they didn't support. Jason had to argue for the existence of God, and Diane had to take the atheist's point of view. They had never mentioned this to me. But I could imagine with what dismay they had approached E.D.'s educational assignment. I wanted her to know how gullible she was. She did her best. I think she wanted to impress me. She repeated back what Jason had been saying to her, basically. But Jason, his pride was obvious. His eyes shone, and some of the color crept back into his face. Jason was absolutely brilliant. Just stunningly, beautifully brilliant. Jason gave back every argument she had ever offered him, and then some. And he didn't just parrot this stuff. He'd read the theology. He'd read biblical scholarship. And he smiled through the whole thing as if he was saying, "Look, I know these arguments backward. I know them as intimately as you do. I can make them in my sleep, and I still think they're contemptible." He was absolutely fucking relentless. and by the end of it she was crying. She held out until the end, but the tears were streaming down her face. I stared. He registered my expression and winced. Go to hell with your moral superiority. I was trying to teach her a lesson. I wanted her to be a realist, not one of these fucking spin-driven navel-gazers. Your whole fucking generation. Do you care whether she's alive? Of course I do. No one's heard from her lately. It's not just you, E.D. She's out of touch. I thought I might try to track her down. Do you think that's a good idea? But the waitress had come with another drink, and E.D. was rapidly losing interest in the subject, in me, in the world around him. Yeah, I'd like to know if she's all right. He took off his glasses and cleaned them with a cocktail napkin. Yeah, you do that, Tyler. Which is how I decided to accompany Wan Ngo Wen to the state of Arizona. Traveling with Wan Ngo Wen was like traveling with a pop star or a head of state, heavy on security and light on spontaneity, but briskly efficient. A neatly timed succession of airport corridors, chartered planes, and highway convoys eventually deposited us at the head of Bright Angel Trail, 3 weeks before the scheduled replicator launches, on a July day hot as fireworks and clear as creek water. One stood where the guardrail followed the canyon's rim. The Park Service had closed the trail and visitor center to tourists, and three of their best and most photogenic rangers were poised to conduct one, and a contingent of federal security guys with shoulder holsters under their hiking lights, on an expedition to the canyon floor, where they would camp overnight.